Today we are going to go a little deep into the concept of non-duality. The path that is described here is of vichara, inquiry, which is the direct path into the nature of reality. It is not a path per se, but for the sake of simplification, we call it a path. In the traditional approach, the individual or the jiva is believed to be the impure character who is given different teachings. The objective is to bring it close to this universal entity called God or Ishvara. And in that endeavor, the paths that are traditionally followed is the path of ethics, which is karma, the path of devotion, which is bhakti, and the path of meditation, which is Raja Yoga. Now, for some people, these paths are perfectly okay. But you see, they retain the separation between the person and the God or Ishvara, as it is called. The direct path brings the focus back to that center, back to the sense of individuality. And the direct path is all about seeing the reality here and now. It is not about following a particular belief. The traditional paths requires obedience, it requires faith in what the guru says. And it is built on that structure. Now, for some people, that is perfectly okay. But you see, whether it is karma or devotion, or whether it is Raja Yoga, meditation, there is always a subject involved over there. The subject, which is the sense of personal identification or me, which believes itself to be impure. And the general notion is that when this me goes through certain practices, it becomes purified and then it attains superconscious bliss, or there are other fancy names given to a state. The direct path says that all state is of the mind. And mind itself, the existence of the sense of separateness itself, is at the root of all perceived suffering. So in the direct path, which is actually followed by very few people, the nature of this separate existence is questioned. And firstly, it is done by examining the nature of what is happening around. So it may be in this format that it moves from outwards to inwards. As in, that in the direct path, we examine what is happening around us first. And the more you examine it, what you find is that it is very difficult to know, to truly know what exactly is happening around us. Because what is apparently happening is very difficult to capture, to make sense of intellectually. So different theories have evolved. Different traditional practices have evolved. Philosophy has evolved. But there is no one method, one teaching, one philosophy that can pinpoint the nature of what is happening. But more you examine and see the interconnectedness of things, what you see is nothing stands independently on its own. Everything is interconnected to everything else. So what seems as a unitary movement is actually the movement of the whole. So that brings us back to this question as to what is the nature of this entity which is perceiving this movement. Is this entity separate from the movement, or is it a part of the same? And the direct path says that there is no separation. It says that what here is being perceived as an individual that is experiencing reality, that sense is actually not there. Because if you see that the whole phenomenality is a subject-object relationship, but it is not that the subject me volitionally rises up and gives rise to a feeling or sensation and then continues with it. For example, when there is anxiety, now you may have seen this to be your own experience, when there is anxiety, it is not that you sat at a particular time of the day and decided to create the anxiety. You didn't think about it. You didn't say that tomorrow at 10:30 in the morning, I'm going to sit and create anxiety. And then I'm going to flow with it. Then I'm going to become the anxiety. It never happens like that. So it is not the subject which produces the object. Think of it this way, that it is the object which actually creates this notion of the subject. So when the anxiety arises in the body because of a certain event, it is the anxiety which produces the subject, that I am experiencing the anxiety, which continues as the horizontal thinking. I don't want to experience this anxiety. I should be okay with this anxiety. I should feel like this, I should not feel like that. The whole dialogue continues. There is a constant fight with the feeling, with the sensation. And that propagates the sensation. So this notion of I gets produced whenever there is a heightened emotion. And this I quickly clings on to that feeling and claims ownership, which becomes me and my story. So I say to myself, I repeatedly say that I am suffering from this personality disorder, I am suffering from that condition, this condition, that condition, and this must be my solution. So I try to look for solutions. But never ever do we question the existence of this I. Is there really an I here? Or is it just coming up? Is I your continuous experience? If you watch throughout the day, you will notice that it is not your continuous experience. Only when you think about yourself, you are. But there are a lot of tasks that gets done automatically in the autopilot mode, as we famously say. And then the I appears and they say, no, you must live consciously. You must not live in the autopilot mode, because that is unconsciousness. That is still a subject-object relationship. A subject being aware of the, a conscious subject being aware of the unconsciousness. Now what happens over time? As you see this entire thing play out, you get to know about the unreality of I. And at some point, it just drops. Now, this may not be an event. This may not happen as a realization in time. It may just simply dissolve. And what that means is that our actions in daily living become spontaneous. So life gets a lot more simplified. In that sense that I may still suffer from different conditions, from personality disorders, from trauma, or any other thing. But the illusoriness of that is seen. And it is not based on denial or repression of what is. So when the feelings, the sensations, the thoughts, the emotions, when they arise, they are not pushed down. So it is not an intellectual concept that my non-existence means that I have to push down my feelings or, you know, suppress the trauma or the abuse that happened. It's not like that. It's just that there is no base to hold the feeling. There is no base to hold that sensation. So the sensations may still arise. The suffering may still happen. But that suffering does not have the momentum to continue in horizontal time, because the sense of I is now loosened and it is just restricted or remained. It just remains concerned with the basic daily needs and daily survival activities, the natural action reaction of the biological organism. It is not concerned with its own propagation. So this I, or the ego sense, this by itself is not good or bad. And neither we are saying that the direct path is superior or inferior to any other path. In fact, the whole point of seeking is an illusion. You see, we live with this image of ourselves, this notion of a personality. I am so and so, this is my life, and I have been denied this, and I should attain that to be fulfilled, to be whole. So I deliberately create a separation between the actual, what is, and conceptual, what should or should not be. So imagine a triangle with what is the actual being on the top. And at the base, there are two points of what should or should not be. So I swing between the two, what should and should not be. And that is what is called dualism. I'm consciously or subconsciously trying to be a certain way or not be a certain way, because I have so many ideas. I have so many beliefs. A lot of it comes from the traditional teachings, the traditional concept. You see, the notion of a seeker itself is an identification. While it happens, it is a requirement. I would say every one of us is a seeker, whether we follow a spiritual path or a philosophical path, it does not matter. Human life is all about seeking. So in that, the illusory seeker comes up with an illusory meaning and an illusory purpose. Now for the seeker, the meaning and the purpose is important. So they keep moving in that direction. They fulfill one purpose after another purpose and then try to make sense of the meaning. But it only strengthens the seeker's sense of separate existence. It does not bring any relief from the suffering. Although the ego says that it wants to surrender, it says that it wants relief, it claims that it wants to liberate itself, but it is only the image trying to modify itself and become a better image. In that sense, the intellectual dialogue that appears in the mind is not the truth. The ego is not about annihilating itself. It may claim that it wants liberation, it wants to annihilate itself, but the ego itself, the nature of itself, is survival. It wants to survive, it wants to expand, it wants to thrive. It seeks sense of security, sense of survival in its own expansion. So it is not interested in annihilating itself. So the seeker may come up with the notion of being a spiritual seeker, which is a bigger illusion than being a seeker. And then comes the notion of being an advanced spiritual seeker, which is pure delusion, and the rise of spiritual ego, which is one of the most devastating forms of ego. I have personally seen how people who love the story of miracles torment others, how they feel so self-righteous and how they want to enforce their opinions onto other people. They may do it overtly or covertly. Someone who is flexible and who says that it does not matter whether you follow the traditional path or the direct path or one particular teaching or one particular philosophy is, in my opinion, a flexible person. Because I don't feel there is one teaching, there is one method or one philosophy that can bring this individual any relief. And the direct path says that it is the individual that has to question all the assumptions, all the worldview that it has created, all the habitual impressions and, you know, and things of those sorts needs to be questioned. Although it is a part of the illusion, the whole seeking is a part of the illusion, but still, that is something which happens. But identifying yourself as an advanced seeker can be delusional. Because slowly you start feeling that you are special. Then you start believing in the stories of miracle. I have come across so many teachers who talk about non-duality, direct path, but eventually they would fall on the story of miracles because miracles sell. It is the ego's fantasy, greatest fantasy. Ego wants thrill, excitement. It does not want its own annihilation. So ego seeks happiness in thrill and excitement. It torments the body in that sense. How many times has it happened that, you know, when we get bored, we switch on the television, maybe watch a horror movie, Or it could be the other way around. Maybe we order a cake or something junk to eat because we want that kick, we want that high. It doesn't matter if it is coming by shock or if it is coming by some heightened pleasure, like a sexual pleasure or gluttony or anything. The nature of this ego mind is continuation. So the body creates the craving, and then the I thought rises and takes ownership of that craving, and it says, now this is what is going to fulfill me. But it never gets fulfilled like that. In fact, it grows stronger. And the stronger this I sense is, the greater is the illusion. And the greater is the illusion, the greater is the separation from wholeness. And the greater is separation from the wholeness, the greater is the suffering. It is very easy to get intellectually caught up in the path or no path, in the method or no method duality. Some people get trapped into superficialities. They would say that even your method is a method. Well, if it is, it is. But what is our real concern here? Is it to prove ourselves right, or is it to know the truth? Whether you follow the traditional path or you follow the direct path, the ultimate objective is to seek the truth. A truth that is not different for you and me. Therefore, concepts alone cannot give you the truth. And the direct path focuses on this centeredness, directly on this centeredness, which in the illusion is believed to be the root of all that is happening. So my feelings, my thoughts, my emotions, my sensations, my worry of life, my money, my finances, all these foundations gives this illusion the strength. But if you see life, if you examine what is happening out there, what you will see is that everything is so intricately interconnected. It is not that one thing is happening on its own accord. There is no one true cause for anything. It is the movement of totality. Everything is moving in totality. Therefore, getting caught up in concepts sometimes can be the ego's way to avoid the inner discomfort and inner pain. And sometimes this is seen as, it is seen very clearly in the path of devotion, where there is a middleman, a guru, that promises eternal bliss. In such cases, as I mentioned earlier, the separation between the God and the one making an investigation, one that is the seeker, the one that is, you know, undergoing this whole process, spiritual process, that separation is continuously maintained. And for a majority of time, mediated by the guru, slowly over time, this devotion towards the God actually turns into devotion towards the guru. And this can, I'm not saying that it is necessarily always the case with everybody, but a majority of times I have seen that this relationship between guru and disciple, for the most part, it is very difficult to make sense of it. If wholeness is all there is, then the guru and disciple dynamic is also a play in illusion. Yes, there are teachers, there are wonderful teachers. I have learned from so many teachers. Teachers like Jiddu Krishnamurti, Ramana Maharishi, Ramesh Balsekar, and many other teachers. But nobody is my guru. Nobody is an authority for me. The authority, it has to come from within. The true guru is within. Even Ramana Maharishi said this. The true guru is within. But what happens with the traditional concepts is that we get caught up in this whole devotional setup where we feel that the more devotion we put towards the guru, because guru is seen as God in living form. However, from what I see is that the mind-body organism, which is living, whether it calls itself enlightened person or seeker or guru or whatever, it is not free from the animalistic instinct which has been installed in us. So there is a part of our brain which is very primitive. And there are times when that part gets activated. And it gets so activated that sometimes it hijacks the rational part of the brain, which is the frontal lobes. There is back and forth communication between different layers in the brain. And sometimes it is very difficult for people to rationally or intellectually observe a phenomena. So they feel that they reacted, or that they should not have done this or done that. And somehow they feel a sense of unworthiness. So the guru tells them that, you know, through path of devotion, the guru will take them there where they will rest in eternal bliss. What the guru does not tell them is that he or she himself is suffering from that. I don't think any of us can control that. But that said, overall, when the reality is seen for what it is, the psyche does undergo a lot of change. And it definitely does bring a lot of peace. But the nature of that peace is very different. It is not that the flow of chemicals in the body will be altered. It may be altered to a certain degree, but a majority of us do not have any control over that. But there is a complete acceptance of things the way they are. The way they are. Because with this notion of separate existence being gone, with this dropping away of the sense of individuality, what I see is that the essence that powers me is the essence that powers everything else in the universe. And that essence by nature is peace. That is the true nature of this. That cannot be conceptualized, but it can be felt as a very natural, as a very ordinary thing. The path of meditation, Raja Yoga, is again a beautiful path. But again, even in that, there is a split between the subject and an object, because there is always a subject which is trying to attain something, enlightenment, self-realization, or it may be anything else. The core belief is that somehow I am impure, that I am not perfect. And then when I do certain practices, which my guru will take care and monitor for me, then perhaps I will become better. Then perhaps I will be freed from my misery. So you see, majority of us, we rely on an authority. And the traditional teachings are built on that. They are built on authority. They are built on, especially in the Eastern world, they are built on the obedience to the guru. And of course, it is an individual's destiny, you know, if they follow that path. Again, we are not here discussing this from the point of right and wrong, whether it is the right path or the wrong path, because whatever you are destined for, you will go through that path only. But eventually, even in the traditional path, you will end up in the direct path itself. So whether it is through the path of karma, the selfless action, or whether it is through the path of devotion, or through the path of meditation, the thing is that the person acting dissolves. The notion of an independent doer acting volitionally dissolves in the path of karma or in the path of devotion. Therefore, even the devotion towards a form dissolves, and the devotion purely remains towards the infinite. Or if it is in the meditation, it is the meditator which dissolves. And what remains is pure meditation. But you see, in some people, it is their destiny to follow the other path. And the direct path has been there since very ancient times. It is not something new. It is not New Age spirituality. To me, direct path is the path of surrender, where the I gets to know its own illusory existence, the futility of its own expansion. Therefore, I remains still, knowing that there is nothing to be done. And it is in that that the I dissolves, because the still I is no I. But when we are surrounded by concepts for self-improvement, we make it our mission that I will become better, I will become improved version of myself, I will change the world, I will bring peace and harmony to the world. It is then that we are diverting our attention from the basic and the most fundamental thing, that who is it that believes it can do all that? So we continuously search for paths to self-improvement, but it only alienates us from our true nature, which is the wholeness. Our fundamental nature is awareness. We are made up of that. We are the source and the substance of everything. But identification with the limited existence creates a separation from the wholeness, which is suffering. And when the I dissolves, then there is no separation, there is simply what is, total acceptance of what is. In that, we do not try to change anything, we do not try to alter anything, we let things happen the way they are. Even when suffering is happening, the path, this direct path, is not concerned with eliminating your suffering. It is not about bringing your suffering to an end to make you a better person. It is only going into the nature of suffering, that who exactly is there that is experiencing suffering. Now for some people, the denial, they see it as a denial. They think that somehow this is denying what happened to me. However, that is not the purpose. The me is also our point of investigation, that who is this me? We fully acknowledge that life is, existence is traumatic. But what is the root? Who is the one experiencing everything? That is the big question. And if you are sufficiently still, if you are absolutely quiet in this moment, what you will see is that all sensations, all emotions, they're all coming, they're all arising. The phenomenality is arising, but there is no center to anything. It is all interconnected. It is only the one thing which is playing out as thought, playing out as feeling, playing out as emotion. But there is no center point. There's no locus to anything. If I ask you, where within yourself are you suffering? What would you say? Yes, you may have symptoms in different parts of your body. You may experience fear in your belly. You may experience a choking sensation in your throat. Or you may feel breathless, or any of those things may happen. But where is the center of suffering? Who exactly is suffering? Where is that? There is no location to that. A lot of people who write to me about their experiences, about the traumas they went through life, and when they sit for meditation or any kind of self-inquiry, they say that we cannot do it. We do not like it because it feels like suffocating. It feels as if we are dying. And in that case, I say that what is beyond that suffocation and death is a great revelation. But only if you have the courage to go that way. Of course, if we don't have the courage, we are not to blame ourselves, because that is then part of our destiny. But eventually we are moving towards that wholeness. That feeling of drowning, which people feel in meditation or self-inquiry, that is the sense of personal identification, which is undergoing dissolution. But we get scared. We are afraid to die. I'm not talking about physical death. I'm talking about the psychologically created entity which is dying. The courage is to let that die, whatever dies. Because when the sense of personal identification dissolves, then what remains is only the truth. Because there is no space for anything else. But if we continually force ourselves to become better through a method, to become enlightened by reading philosophy, scriptures, following gurus, then that is a part of the illusion. The illusory self trying to create itself better in the illusion itself. And the Advaita masters say that truth is here and now. It is free from any dimensions. It cannot be conceptualized. Yet it is your direct experience. It is the source and substance of everything. Everything arises because of this. It arises here in this. Where is your life playing out. It is playing out here. And the way you see it, what I mean is that the way you get to know about this reality slowly, slowly, is first thing is that you are drawn towards it. So even if you follow all the traditional paths or any other path or philosophy or psychology or this or that, where different things are promised, you eventually fall back into this. You start questioning the nature of this, that who is the one that is experiencing? Who is the one that is feeling? So even when you have, say, an uncomfortable interaction with another person where you reacted, your mind does not go outwards towards that person. Your mind goes straight away inwards. And it is not to say that you feel, that you intellectualize this process. It is not to say that you start intellectually questioning as to why did I react. All that happens. You are watching all that as a happening. So at the base of it, you are feeling the raw sensation, the raw emotion, the pure emotion in all its intensity. And you're not trying to alter anything. And that is what self-inquiry really is. It is not about intellectually questioning. Yes, intellectual questioning and self-contemplation, reflections, they may happen. But a true reflection is actually simply witnessing the feeling, the sensation, because that gives a deeper insight rather than all the intellectual ruminations. Because intellect is also part of the ego system. So it cannot crack the code by itself. And when you're open, when you're receptive to all emotions, all feelings, sensation, that is the point where the heart awakens. So that is the first thing, that you are all already drawn to this method. That is why you came here, because perhaps you tried other teachings, other methods, but your confusion remained, your conflict remained. And to live with conflict, to live with that cognitive dissonance is painful. So now you are questioning the source of everything. And second thing is that for some people, it is very intuitive. For them, since the very beginning, they could see the unreality of everything. Some people are like that. I never saw any divinity in form since childhood. While I was never on a spiritual path as a child, as you all know, I have worked for many years in the corporate world. I was a pure materialistic guy. But never did I see any fulfillment in any form. But my heart was always drawn towards the formless. I see even the formless in the form. It is not that I'm putting up this notion. This is my conditioning since the very beginning. So again, coming back to the fundamental question, what is the nature of this me that perceives reality with its limited filters and creates its own perception of life, living, and the way world is? I meet so many people who say that this world is a tough place, it's a horrible place. And I also meet people who say that the world is a lovely place, it's a blissful place, it's a joy to be alive. I am somewhere in the middle. I say it is neither blissful, it is nor terrible. It is simply what it is. Yes, there is beauty. There are colors, there are beauty. But that is not the beauty that Jiddu Krishnamurti talks about. Jiddu Krishnamurti talks about a different beauty, which Ramana Maharishi calls as the stillness. And the beauty and the stillness are one and the same things. Which is beyond what is. And that is the essence. That is the essence powering me and the whole universe. Me, you, everybody else and the whole universe. So while the gadgets, the devices may malfunction, nothing happens to the essence. The essence by nature is indestructible. But when we identify with the limited, what I mean by limited is that when we think that we are just this mind and body and that we are separate from the rest and that somehow we have to shape, alter this personality to become better through different teachings, then we get caught up in an endless process, which is usually marked by a lot of conflict and confusion because we imagine ourselves to be a particular way. We have projected an image, a perfect image of ourselves in the future, and we just want to attain that. But that image is a continuation, is just this image in a different form. There is no separation between this image and that image. When I say this image, I mean the me, the sense of personal identification. So the more I try to grasp it, the farther it runs away. So objectively, I don't get it. Then I start projecting that image onto a guru. And I see guru as perfect, as flawless entity. And I want to be like the guru. But as I mentioned earlier, no matter how calm or peaceful a person appears, that animal instinct is always there. There will be times when the guru will show reactions, because that is a part of human conditioning. I don't see it as a good or bad. I see it as conditioning. In some people, it will be direct aggression. In some people, it will be passive. But even a guru in form, in the living form, is not free from that. So guru himself is not a perfect entity. But they are promising perfection. Perfection is a permanent state. The bliss of samadhi. But the thing is that even samadhi does not free us. Yes, it is a beautiful glimpse of restlessness and bliss, but it never lasts. It is a state. And when we come back, see, the dissolution of I does not mean that we have to kill the I. The ego is not to be killed. Killing the ego would mean death of the body, mind and body, because it cannot survive without that. It is there for a purpose. So direct path does not aim at killing the ego. We are simply observing what is happening. We are simply examining all these images, all these beliefs, all these ideas and this perception that we have built around ourselves. We are dwelling deep into the nature of this entity we called me. That's it. We are not trying to destroy it. We are not trying to kill it or anything. Once the nature of me is understood, that itself brings a lot of relief. Because then nothing becomes our story. You see, this I has a tendency towards stickiness. It wants to bind to things. That is its nature. It wants to flow horizontally, and it is by design. Otherwise, there would be no possibility of any interaction with another, you know, whether person, animal, or anything. So it is the nature of I to move horizontally. So we will never be free of that till we are alive. So in that sense, we are never free of this foundation. But having understood the nature of this foundation, it does not impact us in the same way as we identify with the foundation. When we identify ourselves as the limited and being bound by life, then we feel trapped. Then we feel that everything in life is meaningless and that everything is a nihilistic void. But that is not what the direct path is about. In fact, the direct path is liberating in the sense that when it is realized that the I is an illusion and that all movement is an illusion, one actually becomes more engaged in the world. It is not that one becomes lazy. But that said, there is full engagement, but there is no involvement. There is no egoic involvement with anything. So you may participate in the world, but you don't get caught up in the drama of life. You don't get caught up in the drama people play. A lot of human beings play drama. You learn to live life moment by moment, you know, as it comes, with complete acceptance that whatever the next moment brings is not in my control. Therefore, I live spontaneously. And that is the transformation that happens because of this understanding. Whereas if you are caught up in a path where you're trying to become better or calm or somehow perfect in some way, then you will remain conflicted because there is no such thing as perfection. Every image is an illusion. The image may modify itself, but perfection is just an idea in the mind. There is no such thing as a perfect image. In fact, trying to sustain a permanent state, a permanent image, is suffering. If you think that once I achieve enlightenment through any method or means, and once I am connected to God, then all my problems will be taken care of by that God. So if I have a financial trouble, then God will do a miracle and solve all my financial troubles. If I have a relationship problem, then the universe will magically bring me somebody who I'll fall in love with and live happily for the rest of my life. That is not the promise. That is not what this path, direct path, is about. The direct path is not concerned with your story. It is questioning the nature of you. It says, who is the one who wants this or that? So you see, you don't live with this notion that universe is somehow obligated to fulfill your wishes and demands, because you have realized that there is no center. So every sensation, every desire is just an arising in consciousness. Consciousness is what you are. Consciousness is without agenda, without objective. So you live spontaneously. And by nature, the organism, the mind-body organism, is extremely peaceful. And yes, life is never going to be a smooth curve, a smooth transition for us. There will be ups and downs. It's never going to be a straight line. But with this acceptance, there is a shift in perception. It is now no more about me. Yes, the basic needs and basic desires are always there. Like taking care of oneself, the body, eating healthy food, and all those things continue, you know, living in comfort. But there is no need to torture oneself to attain anything. So if I'm living in this comfortable house, I will not go down and sleep on the streets in order to become more humble or more spiritual, because that is also the ego. The ego can come in different forms. It just wants its own expansion. It is not interested in its own annihilation. And the annihilation is simply accepting things the way they are. That is not what ego is interested in. So ego can find, it can, you know, shape shift. So you may say that, look, I donate so much money. Or it can be that even though I am rich, I live, I live so humbly, you know, I live so frugally. So the ego takes pride in all of that. So say you are from a particular nation and say you are, you have certain privileges in that nation, in that country, being a part of that culture. So the ego will make you feel guilty that, look, children in the Sahara subcontinent in the Africa, they are starving, and you here are enjoying and sitting and enjoying your lovely meal and this, that. That is the nature of ego. It wants to pull you down because it is seeking continuation. The fact that you did not have any choice in this matter, if you were born in a privileged nation, in a privileged family, that was, you did not choose that. It happened. If they were born there, the children who are suffering, if they were born in a nation which is war-torn and this and that, then of course it is their destiny. Now, nothing stops you from helping them. But you see, that sense of that I am providing this help to them, it is not done from that sense. You may quietly do your work without telling anybody. When you're sufficiently confident about yourself, when you know that this image does not need any enhancement, you may do it quietly without telling anybody. You're not going to put your pictures on Instagram or, you know, get yourself published in books. You may do it absolutely quietly. And the joy that you feel in that is internal. Now, this is said to be the path of karma, the selfless action. However, for majority of people, that is not the case. They want to advertise. See, look, I am doing this. So direct path says that just see what is this entitification all about. It is bringing the attention, the focus back to this I. And the more that happens, not as a vigilant practice, but naturally, one starts becoming more observant towards their own feelings and sensations and whatever is happening around. Therefore, that I thought is the God principle that shines within you. That is your guru, inner guru, the true guru, which will lead you to the source.